It's time for Bleed Tech Blue Radio, sponsored by Trenton Interiors. This is your source for Louisiana Tech sports news. For the next 90 minutes, Bleed Tech Blue Radio goes deep inside Tech football, basketball, and recruiting. Tonight's show on ESPN 97.7 is also brought to you by your 26 area local State Farm agents, Brister's Smokehouse, National Jewelry, Pierce Service Company, Brennan Dodge, Dairy Queen, and Gary Stokely, Keller Williams Realty, as well as hotline sponsor Fairway Cars. Now here's your host for Bleed Tech Blue Radio, Jonathan Ford.
Welcome into Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7, Episode 7 of Year 8 of Bleed Tech Blue Radio. This year brought to you by Trenton Interiors and Company, 111 North Trenton Street in downtown Ruston. They are open. Go check them out in the historic Rogers Furniture Building. Also, give them a call, 318-255-7698, for all your interior decorating and designing needs. Today, we'll talk ULL Louisiana Tech football. Of course, Tech coming off a dominating win over the Cajuns Saturday inside the Joe in front of the fourth largest crowd in Joe IA Stadium history. The third largest in Joe IA Stadium history was the first game of the season. So, very good crowds thus far for Louisiana Tech. They play UTSA Saturday in San Antonio. We'll talk to Mike Craven from BirdsUp.com, the UTSA Rivals.com site. Jason, to say the least, there's no love lost between Louisiana Tech and UTSA, and the two have played, what, five times?
Three, ever. Like 13 and 14.
It's bizarre how much these two teams hate one another.
I think this is only San Antonio's fifth year of existence in football, and they played 1AA for a year or two, maybe, or they were transitioned.
That sounds right.
They were transitioned for a year, maybe. But yeah, 2012 in the WAC, they played in Ruston, Tech wins. 2013, Skip Holtz's first year, they played the last game of the season in San Antonio, and they paced at Tech 30-10. I think Tech was pretty much done with that season at that point. I mean, they were just mailing it in. So
there wasn't much to play for.
No. And so then coming back, you know, last year, UTSA played Tech pretty tough. Tech scored 21 points in the third quarter. Looked like they put the game away. UTSA scored some in the fourth quarter to make it interesting, but Tech won 27-20. But I've got an article coming out this week, just a preview on UnderdogDynasty.com, and I looked up how many penalties between the two teams in three games. 63 penalties for over 500 yards. Average of 21 penalties a game. I mean, these two don't like each other.
That's the definition of chippy.
Yeah, it's very chippy.
Maybe it's an understatement to call it chippy. But these two teams despise each other.
And I think maybe just going back to the old WAC days, you know, Tech didn't have a real rival in the WAC, so there was one.
That was as close as it was going to come geographically.
Yeah, and before they even joined, though, Tech formed a rivalry on the field with Hawaii and Fresno, whether that was because of the student sections, they were just more into it. And I think that's the way it is with San Antonio. It's just hard to be a rival with Idaho or San Jose State, teams that don't have tradition in football or they're not very good very often. Same way in Conference USA. Maybe North Texas is more of a geographic rival, but they're just not very good the last couple of years. San Antonio is pretty good. They aspire to be really good. They want to be like Tech, and so there's that on their side of things. And then Tech's not going to back down from anybody. And so if somebody tries to play physical, that's going to get the Tech players fired up. And so just like with Fresno State back in the WAC days, I think maybe it's not the most natural rivalry, but they're creating one on the field.
Nice segue there, not on purpose from you. Kenneth Dixon had two unsportsmanlike conduct penalties against the Cajuns, getting him ejected. And what was that, the fourth quarter?
Yeah, it was fourth quarter.
And there was some concern that maybe he might miss the first half against UTSA. He will not have to. That's just for fighting or targeting or those kinds of penalties. So there's no concern of him missing action. I thought that was maybe the most interesting part of the press conference yesterday. Coach Holtz saying that he was sitting in his office at 7 o'clock on Sunday morning, and in walked Kenneth Dixon and wanted to sit down and talk about it, which I think shows you all you need to do, all you need to know about Kenneth Dixon as a person and as a football player, that he's that conscientious and that concerned about it.
Yeah, I mean, Kenneth talks every game. I mean, he's on the field. Every time you see him get tackled, he's getting up and he's saying something. That's how he gets himself motivated. He tries to get in the head of the other team, and he got caught up in it. He felt bad about it afterward, and it's not a big deal. I would rather it happen in the fourth quarter in a game where they're blowing out Lafayette than have it happen in the first quarter against San Antonio.
Jason, I like to think that I'm a pretty decent human being.
Some would say that.
Can you imagine how much I would talk on a football field?
Oh, man. It'd be bad. I've seen you on the sidelines for basketball back in the day, so we know. Especially if you're as good as Kent Dixon is. I mean, why?
I'm pretty good at talking trash, so.
Well, and so then if you're as good at football as Dixon is, why not tell him how bad you're going to run over him? I mean, how bad you're killing him, you know? I would tell him after every play just like he does.
You got owned. But Saturday, ULL Lafayette, whatever word you want to use for him, minus the ones that they want to be used. Kenneth Dixon, 22 carries, 59 yards, 2.7 yards a carry, one touchdown, a long of 9. I asked this to Coach Holtz during the press conference, that is it a pick-your-poison kind of thing with Tech's offense right now, as multiple as they've become, even without Carlos Henderson in the game? Why do you key on a running back? Now, granted, he can bust one at any moment. We've seen him do that throughout his career. But you can score so much faster through the air, and Tech proved that. Why?
I don't know. I mean, I heard you on the air right before we came on, and you know, we've seen Tech teams in the past, like you were saying, just be air raid under Croton or Dykes, and now with Tech's passing so good and their running game, like they've been.
And the offensive line protecting whenever teams are blitzing.
Yeah, I mean, you're just begging them to kill you. And they've shown with Trent Haynes, Carlos Henderson, Paul Turner's getting back healthy. There's so many weapons out there. I mean, it's almost like it really is danged if you do, danged if you don't. You try to take away Dixon, Driscoll's going to kill you. If you don't, if you back off, Dixon's going to eat you alive. And so it really is the best of both worlds. Tech's got both things going for them, and that's why they are number 16 in the nation in total offense with 503 yards, I think.
And that is what Tech likes to do. It is take the run away. But
there's no quarterbacks in Conference USA outside of Western Kentucky that can make you pay. Now everybody's keeping an eye on Southern Miss. They look like they've improved some, but that's the last game of the year. But we're talking about UTEP and UTSA.
UTSA may not even have their starting quarterback Saturday.
North Texas. I mean, those quarterbacks are not going to beat you. They just won't.
As the French say, they're garbage.
Yeah, so FIU couldn't do it. The Cajuns couldn't do it, and I don't think either of those three teams will do it, the three Texas teams. And so, really, who has a chance? Middle Tennessee has played three big schools and played them pretty decent, and they've blown out two smaller schools. So we don't know what Middle Tennessee is, but they got to come to Ruston. Rice is on the road. They're a decent team, but maybe not as good as we thought they were. The one team that might can pass and give Tech a challenge is Southern Miss, and that's always been a rivalry game. That'll be a tough game. It's in Ruston, last game of the season, Thanksgiving weekend. But I fully expect Tech to rack up some wins between now and then, because nobody's got a quarterback like Jeff Driscoll.
He has been impressive. I'll ask you this. Do you think his accuracy was an issue Saturday? Obviously, it wasn't a big issue because they won going away. But was his accuracy an issue Saturday?
I mean, if you look at his total statistics, I don't think he's been extremely accurate all year. But it doesn't matter because he can run so well, and he's got the arm. He can make the big play. And so, I mean, I think he averaged against ULL 8.8 yards per attempt. I mean, that's pretty good. You throw two passes, one of them's going to complete. You've got 9 yards. It's third and one.
He's 60.3. 43% completion percentage this year. His best in his career was 2013, whenever he missed the majority of the year to a leg injury at 68.9. Last year, he was 53.8.
Yeah, and so he was right at 60 this past weekend, 20 to 33. That's, you know, 60.1 or 60.2%, I'm going to get.
60.6.
And so, I mean, He's not going to be 70%, but as long as you're 55-60 and you've got the wheels he has and you've got Kenneth Dixon and you've got Trent Taylor, I mean, hey, big plays is what is keeping Tech going, and that's what we were looking for. Also, on the defensive side, last week we talked about it, got the big play right there before halftime, totally changed the game. Just like the UTSA game last year. That happened in the third quarter, but Tech was able to break it open and using their defense. This game, what was that guy thinking throwing the ball? I don't know. And then I'm on the opposite side of the stadium. Abraham intercepts it, and he's running. And you're thinking, okay, the time's out. Surely he won't get in the end zone. It looked like they had a wall lined up in front of the end zone, all the offensive linemen who didn't get down the field. I still haven't seen the film of it, but I guess he just jumped over them.
He didn't really jump over them. Those offensive linemen were just so unathletic, and they were waiting inside the end zone,
which was stupid.
What good does it do you once you get to the goal line?
Yeah, they should have been standing at the five or whatever. So it was just a
it's
great.
It's like they hadn't practiced interception return.
Yeah, and if you're UTSA, I mean, if you're ULL, you probably should be UTSA too. You probably should be practicing interception return, but
that
was a great individual play by Abraham. It really did break the game open.
Elijah McGuire is ULL's best player, and it's not even close. And he's really good.
But just like last year, they had Alonzo Harris.
Harris.
He had like 7 or 8 carries in the first half, was chewing up yards, but they got behind and they got away from him. McGuire only had 12 carries for 84 yards. 7 yards a carry, but they had to get away from him. He also had 6 receptions for 70 yards. But
I honestly think they went away from it too soon.
Oh, yeah, because that's all they got that will work. They had to keep working it. But you get behind it, you get desperate, and you start throwing. And that's when you get in trouble.
That is a really poorly coached football team. Really poorly coached.
Yeah.
I think that last play of the half goes back to the arrogance of Mark Hudspeth.
There you go. I don't know if it's just the talent gap in the Sun Belt. He's just not able to – he can just roll out players and win games because he seems to do it every year. But this isn't the Sun Belt. I mean, he just could not do that against Tech. And I'll be interested to see.
You gave me big eyes like you didn't expect me to call him arrogant on the radio.
Well, I mean, I think everybody knows he is. I mean, that's just part of his –
He's probably the most overrated coach in college football.
Yeah, they have done a good job. They win their conference, but yeah, that's his he's macho. He's arrogant. He's out there. He's trying to be the tough guy. That's his kind of persona. And if that's what it takes to get his players motivated, then hey, whatever. But it just didn't work on Saturday. It didn't work last year either. And now I don't think Tech has the plan for another 10 years until they get brave again to start talking a little trash.
Give us a call or a text on the Fairway Carts of Minden hotline or text line, 888-993-7762. The Fairway Carts of Minden hotline or text line, 888-993-7762. We're also brought to you by your 26 area local State Farm agents. We appreciate all of our sponsors for making Bleed Tech Blue Radio possible. We'll be back right after this.
Rip it off, taking that time right behind my back. And I'm talking to myself at night because I can't forget.
Welcome back to Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. I'm Jay Ford, publisher of BleedTechBlue.com and host of Bleed Tech Blue Radio. This season, we're brought to you by Trenton Interiors of Ruston, downtown Ruston, 111 North Trenton Street. They're open for business. Go check them out in the historic Rogers Furniture building. To add on, before we get to Monty on the Fairway Carts Amendment hotline, Mark Hudspeth did not even ride the bus to or from Ruston.
Talk about poor leadership. I mean,
here's a picture on the Book of Faces.
Maybe he rode with the team down there and was just riding back with his family.
You think he bought a car in Ruston?
No, hopefully he met his family afterwards and rode with them. Surely he rode with the team up here. Surely.
He pumping gas at the Exxon station in Ruston. Folks, there's some things you can't make up, and that's one of them. Let's go to Monty on line one. What's going on, Monty?
MH, yeah. Hey, I wanted to say that I'm pretty sure that they've never won an outright Sun Belt championship. I'm not sure they've ever won one, period, but I don't think – I'm almost positive they never won one outright.
Well, that makes me even more happy.
Yeah, I think that's since he's been there, I don't believe they have. And I wanted to and you know the reason they're going to the New Orleans Bowl. They've done well with attendance. It's handy for them. But they're also your best friend Carl Benson's boy. So if Carl Benson wants them in New Orleans, that's where they're going.
Yeah, I mean Carl Benson the idiot?
Well, I think he may be. I know some people like to refer to him that way. But he does love him some UL. And he refers to him as UL in everything he ever says until he gets up here in North Louisiana. And then he'll cut it back a little bit. But anyway, we added him another L this weekend, I think.
Yeah.
Hey, MH, you're right. I mean, 2014, second place. It looks like 11 that were third, 12 that were second, and then tied for first and 13 with Arkansas State. So, yeah, no outright.
Yeah, and it's not even a close second in football compared to what we're used to playing and seeing. It's sad to say, but it's true. And one other thing I wanted to mention, we have probably the best beat writer we've ever had as far as covering Tech. Being informative, but he showed him a little too much love today in his chat session. He had a chance to shut the door on him, and I understand he's a writer and he's not supposed to be partial, but he was a little partial toward ULL today. If you go back and read it, he made some comments. He mentioned the basketball beatdowns that we've taken on a Wednesday for 2 years in a row that really don't matter that much. And he also mentioned baseball, which nobody watches. So unless it's LSU. But anyway, I just wanted to mention that too.
Yeah, I mean, we do have much better coverage of all Tech sports than we've had in years. It's been really good the last several years. And that just comes with winning, just like the attendance does. We talked about having two of the top crowds in Tech history this year.
Yeah.
Tech's winning. We're getting better coverage, getting more students. But then the whole ULL thing, yeah, football's king. We don't want to lose to them in anything. But, yeah, hopefully we'll see basketball and baseball start getting them back a little bit and put them in their place.
Well, MH, we really appreciate you joining us here on Bleed Tech Blue Radio.
All right, thank y'all.
You bet. Give us a call on that Fairway Carts Amendment hotline or text line. Get sued as a text. You don't call the text line. You shoot a text to it. 888-993-7762, the Fairway Carts Amendment hotline.
Well, I was looking at our favorite site, the Math C Ratings. Looking ahead, Tech's ranked in the top 60 or 70 teams, whatever. Every team they play in the conference to go is ranked 101, 102, or worse. Rice and Southern Miss are 101, 102. Everybody else is worse. Tech's favored to win 70% against Rice. Everybody else, they are favored to win by more of a percentage. So Tech's going to be the heavy favorite in every game they play the rest of the year inside of the conference.
Yeah, the only game they're not favored in, Mississippi State. Let's go back to that Fairway Carts Amendment hotline with Rafe. What's going on, my friend?
Man, I'm enjoying this week. About you?
Oh, yeah.
I can't complain. The more stuff we can find on Hudspeth, the better.
He's so easy to make fun of. He's such a... Yeah, I mean, I don't mind poor coaching, but whenever you look like that and present yourself like that, then, you open yourself up to every kick in the butt you get. And anyway, I don't even want to talk about him. I wanted to talk about, the feeling every Tech fan knows, that whenever we taste a little bit of prosperity and things look like they may be going in the right way, football-wise, then all of a sudden out of nowhere, or maybe not out of nowhere, but predictably, we have a blunder. And it, you know, it's kind of has different causes each time, but everyone kind of knows it's the potential of it to occur, and so you go into every game thinking, is this the one where we're going to slip up or goof it, and we're going to be beaten and kind of put back into our place? Y'all know the feeling I'm talking about?
Oh yeah, maybe like Utah State 2012, something like that.
Well, it's not just Utah State, but Utah State, and let's follow that up with a little San Jose State just to top it all.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, I mean, it's normal. It's a normal feeling.
It's a normal feeling, you know, and you almost anticipate it, and there's something about the way that Holtz runs his system and his structure, and the way that he's intelligent. You know, I heard that before I even saw him coach, that he was extremely intelligent, which, you know, that's kind of a redundant thing to say, but it's really not with some coaches. But even, you know, one thing that I've noticed about him in the last couple of years, and especially this year, is that his teams are going to play. And, you know, like, I thought we may fold against Western Kentucky. I thought, well, here, I mean, they're just going to kill us because of all the things that happened early in the game. And then Kansas State, you know, we're look like we're better than Kansas State, but they get back up on us, and I think, well, you know, they're just going to, you know, pull away and beat us by double digits. But that hasn't been the character of his teams, and it looks like his teams are buying what he's selling. And to me, that's the intangible that makes this team more promising, to where I think we're going to go to UTSA and we're going to beat them. You know why? Because we're better than them, and we don't lose to teams that we're better than. You know, as we progress in the season, you know, I think Western Kentucky was probably better than us the first game of the year in that environment. You know, Kansas State, well, were we quite good enough to pull it off?
Yes.
Well,
no.
Well, that one hurt because
the silly Zebras.
Well, and Ray, if that's what I was going to say, you're right. And going back to even his first year, the only time Tech really loses a game when they're winning and are in control is turnovers. So you go back to Dixon fumbling the ball against Kansas in the first year, then last year Old Dominion or Northwestern State, especially Northwestern State, you get the turnovers late, give them a chance to win. Kansas State, you've got it wrapped up. Taylor fumbles the ball. If Tech just holds on to the ball late, they're beating those teams, and
they will beat them. And you know the difference is, and you know this is, you had a great guy in Sokol to come in, and he was the right guy at the right time. But we were not as multiple with him. You know, we just could. There, I mean, with Driscoll, there really is no telling what he can and will do, because he's got weapons at receiver. He's got Dixon. He can tuck it. He can run it. He can read defenses. He's durable. You know, he's the type of guy that has the poise and the experience to really overcome that adversity that occurs in games, and to not just overcome it, but really to, you know, to, I don't know what the right word is, but shine in them. You know, shine even in adversity. That's the time whenever the good ones step up, you know, and they say, no, this is what we're made of. And they, you know, against the odds and what's apparent in momentum, they change momentum. And I'm really impressed with him, you know, just from every standpoint. I know he's not perfectly accurate, but, you know, he's throwing at like 30 different people, you know. Some of them 5'2", some of them 6'8". You know, it's hard to get your everything going, the timing and all that, when you're throwing it to so many players.
And he's just he's just a gamer is the way I would describe it. He's just playing football, and there's no mind games with him or anything like that. He's just going out there. He knows what to do. He's been doing this for years, and he just gets it done. And I keep saying it every week. He looks like Luke McCown out there.
He looks like Luke McCown, except Luke McCown would throw it in the triple coverage, and they would pick it. You know, I mean, Luke was a gunslinger, and so he had full green light, just heave it and see what happens. And Jeff's far more cautious than that. Hey, last point on this subject. You know, I thought whenever he lost Houston Bates and lost what we lost at linebacker, you know, and the things that we had going against us coming in to the season, that Well, you know, how can you expect us to be where we were last year, because these guys were such difference makers at important positions? But lo and behold, we have guys that, because of the way that Holtz has, I guess, installed a system and recruited and got the right coaches in and all that, well, there's guys that step into those spots. And then you see, even this past Saturday night, well, there's more guys that can step into those spots and not just, you know, hopefully not fail there, but actually be dominant in certain positions. And, you know, like you said on Fletch's show this morning, I mean, we had looked out there and there's 11 freshmen playing, and, you know, and this is, and they're not just playing and like giving up 21 points like we did the Lafayette at the end of last year's game. They're beating them, intercepting balls, won't let them score, things like that.
Oh, it was great to see. And those are the guys that are going to be on the field next year. I mean, those are that's your team.
Well, Rafe, good stuff as always. Appreciate you calling in.
Yeah, man. Thank you. Talk to you later.
Get in the game with Rafe after this coming segment when we will talk to Mike Craven from BirdsUp.com about Tech's upcoming game against UTSA Saturday in San Antonio. This segment and this show also brought to you by Brister's Smokehouse in Ruston. We'll be back right after this with Mike Craven with BirdsUp.com. Welcome into Bleed Tech Blue Radio, brought to you by Trenton Interiors and Company, 111 North Trenton Street in downtown Ruston, inside the historic Rogers Furniture Building. 318-255-7698 for all your interior design needs. Let's go to the Fairway Carts of Minden hotline with Mike Craven of BirdsUp.com. How's it going, Mike?
Pretty good, guys. How y'all doing?
Doing wonderful. Mike, general thoughts of first off, just what UTSA must do to win Saturday inside the Alamo Dome?
Well, first, they got to eliminate mistakes, especially unforced errors, you know, turnovers, penalties, not take sacks. You know, they're going to have to stay in front of the chains because the UTSA defense is really good, but they can't be on the field as long as they've had to be on the field so far this year in order to take home a victory this Saturday. So I would say definitely on offense, don't hurt yourself and stay in front of the chains, and defensively just try to get off the field on third down as much as possible.
Who do you expect to start at quarterback Saturday, Blake Bogenschutz or the walk-on sophomore?
Within the family, like outside of the program, they seem pretty optimistic about Blake being able to go. He got hit pretty hard. They're saying it's not concussion, but everything is leading to them treating him like he has one. So it'll probably be up in the air until Saturday, but the feeling so far is that it's about 50-50. I think Blake's family is saying that he should play. He didn't practice today, so I wouldn't be surprised to see both of them. But if Blake can't go, then, yeah, it will be up to Dalton Sturm in order to lead the offense. And that makes the offense completely different because he's more of a runner than a passer.
Well, Mike, we were looking at the UTEP game last week, and it's 3-0 at halftime, and it really was the UTSA defense that got the ball rolling, got the safety that kind of fired the team up. They scored it within the next minute, and then had two interception touchdowns. Is that the kind of the game plan that is going to have to be successful for UTSA going forward? Is the defense going to have to create offense? Kind of like,
for sure.
Kind of like Louisiana Tech does.
For sure. UTSA is not the type of offense built to go 80 yards all the time. There's not many explosive plays. The wide receivers don't make a ton of plays after the catch. So it's a very grinded out type offense. And so if they're always facing long fields, they're going to have a lot of trouble. That's what happened with the Kansas State game. They just always face long fields, and they could get 30, 40 yards, but once they get within 40 yards, UTSA is one of the worst offenses in the nation. So They're going to need some big plays offensively, but, yeah, they're going to need the defense to set them up, even the return game to have a couple big plays to give them some short fields and give them opportunities to score. Because I think they'll be able to stay in the game defensively, but it could be one of those things where Louisiana Tech just slowly and slowly builds and builds the lead, and then the floodgates open late when the offense can't get anything going. And we've seen that theme at UTSA since the start of last season.
How good of a season is Morgan having at tight end? He's a physical specimen, probably an NFL tight end down the road. What has UTSA done to get him involved?
They move him around a lot. They line him up in a 3-point stance next to a tackle. They'll split him out wide in the red zone to get matched up against the cornerback. They'll kind of flex him out a little bit to see if they can get him on a safety linebacker with the free release. So they're very creative in the ways they use David Morgan. And like you said, I mean, I think, you know, obviously I may be a little bit biased because I watch him all the time, but, you know, he's the best tight end in Conference USA. I mean, the guy really is UTSA's best player. Maybe their first player to be drafted in the NFL coming up this next year. He's a special talent. He lacks elite speed, but kind of like a basketball player, he's just really good at using his size to block out defenders. And he has amazing hands. I mean, his hands are huge, and so he catches anything coming his way. I think they force it to him sometimes a little too much, and they've gotten in trouble doing that with some tip balls that ended up being intercepted. But for the most part, they move him around really well and kind of get him involved in as many possible ways as they can because they don't have a lot of playmakers outside of their running back.
I mean, he's already eclipsed last year's numbers that he was able to get. 20 receptions, 255 last year. This year is already 20 receptions, 267. So he's off to a pretty frenetic pace.
Yeah, and he's been a guy who's always had the potential. He was a great wide receiver in high school out of Marble Falls under Todd Dodge, who's a pretty famous coach around these parts. So he's always been good at receiving. He's gotten a lot better at blocking as he's gained weight. But his biggest issue is he's suffered through injuries since he stepped on campus. I don't think he's played 12 full games since he's been on campus. He finally seems healthy. They took a lot of precaution with him in the spring and even in fall camp, and he seems very healthy, and he's playing like we all expected him to play if he could avoid those nagging injuries.
Hey, Louisiana Tech the last 2 weeks has seen teams just kind of sell out to stop Kenneth Dixon, and it's been Jeff Driscoll using his feet or finding his receivers to beat teams. How do you see UTSA trying to defend Louisiana Tech's multiple offense?
I mean, they're obviously going to focus on Dixon. I think it'd be silly not to. Even though Driscoll has shown that he's able to make plays when the running game's not there, you still have to stop that and make them one-dimensional and hope that you can get a few interceptions. Maybe he's off that day, a couple drop balls, get in a punt situation. So I don't know if they load the box. UTSA's pretty good in their front seven and stopping the run, and that may be able to help. You may see a Rover safety slide down here and there in certain situations, but obviously the key is to stop Dixon, stop the running game, and make the passing game beat you, and that's probably every defense's philosophy going into pretty much every single game that they ever face. So I don't think you see anything much different. They're going to try to make La Tech one-dimensional. The problem is that if you make La Tech one-dimensional, they can still beat you, and that's what makes La Tech probably the favorite to win the Western Division of Conference USA.
Well, and you're right about trying to stop the run, and UTSA is really good at stopping the run. I mean, the stats don't show it because of all the big schools that you guys have faced, but against the run, you can throw the rankings out of all those because of who UTSA has played, but that's what Skip Holtz was saying in his press conference. But UTEP's a running team. They got an offensive line coach for their head coach. You know, he wants to be physical and run the ball. UTSA held them to 59 yards rushing. I mean, they really shut them down. And so you can kind of see what Tech's going to face. FIU was able to play pretty good defense against Tech, hold them under 30 points. The Cajuns held them under their rushing totals pretty good. And so I think that's what UTSA is going to try to do too. But they're going to have a lot more talent to work with on that defensive front than the last two teams that Tech faced have.
Yeah, I think something that's misleading about UTSA being 1-4 right now is that this is the best UTSA team that UTSA has ever had if we're just talking pure talent. There's talent on the field right now that's legitimate D1 talent where when the program was starting, a lot of those guys were Southland talent type guys that didn't have D1 offers that came to UTSA because UTSA needed as many players as possible. Now you're starting to see guys on the field who had offers from other Conference USA schools. And so the talent level at UTSA is a lot higher than it has been before. The issue with that is a lot of them are inexperienced because this was such a senior-led team for the last couple of years that there's still communication breakdowns in the secondary. Drew Douglas, the middle linebacker, missed a couple of games, and that really messed up a lot of the alignment and assignment calls for UTSA in the front seven. He's back now, and they played a lot better last week with him in there. And, yeah, so I think UTSA has the talent to stack up with Louisiana Tech. If we're talking defense versus offense, it's the other way around. I don't know if UTSA has the talent offensively to match La Tech, because it's not like you're going to pitch a shutout or keep La Tech to 10 points. So they're going to need to score. And I don't know if offensively UTSA has shown enough consistency to be able to do that over 60 minutes.
How many points do you think is realistic that UTSA can expect to score?
Offensively, I think if they can get to 20, great. You know, obviously if they can get a return touchdown, a defensive touchdown, or even set up drives inside plus territory to where they don't have to go very far, maybe that number raises. But, you know, UTSA over the last, I guess what now, 17 games dating back to the end of 2013, I think they've only scored 30 over four or five times in that span. So they're not an offensive juggernaut. They're just not. And so they're going to have to rely on their defense, play field position, try to make it an ugly game, see if they're in it in the fourth quarter, and then see what happens from there. If Louisiana Tech gets to 30, they win this game. Is really the number UTSA has to worry about defensively.
Well, Mike, we were talking in our last segment about how this has kind of turned into a rivalry that was unexpected. You know, when the league kind of formed in its current format, you would think UTSA and UTEP would be rivals, or Tech and Southern Miss, which they are to some degree. But, and even North Texas, I mean, I think Denton's 300 miles from Ruston, 300 miles from San Antonio. Maybe both schools thought North Texas would be more of a rival. But you mentioned recruiting and recruiting better talent. I think Tech and UTSA are crossing paths on the recruiting trail a little bit more. Bryce recruits maybe a little different type of player. Or UNT's not recruiting at that level. So when you're banging heads recruiting and then you get on the field and it's been so competitive, it really has turned into a rivalry that I think is kind of unexpected, just given the distance between the two schools.
For sure, and especially being out of state where UTSA has, you know, three conference teams within the state. The problem with Rice is Rice's fan base isn't very huge in terms of football, so that kind of eliminates that one a little bit. North Texas has been bad, so that hurts that. UTEP is further away from San Antonio than Ruston is, so I think the distance there makes that a little bit tougher. But Louisiana Tech's the top of this conference, at least on this side of the division, and UTSA's known that since they got into Conference USA, and so when you're the new kid on the block, I think you want to take it to the, you know, the big dog on the block, and that's Louisiana Tech right now. So I think it's a game that's very important for UTSA and recruiting, and just from a standpoint of kind of building a reputation and moving forward and not being that new program anymore, but one program that people need to respect. And so I think the Louisiana Tech game is that barometer for them each year to kind of see where they stack up against the better teams in the conference. And that's going to breed a little bit of chippiness and that kind of stuff. I think each team probably has some issues with the other and how they play and how much they talk and things like that. So I think it's just kind of a perfect storm on the field. And when you see that stuff happen on the field, it's going to bleed towards the fan base. And I think that's what we've seen over the last couple of years.
You said it perfectly in the Ask the Expert piece on BleedTechBlue.com this week, where you said that you don't know where the dislike comes from, but at this point, it doesn't really matter who started it.
Exactly. I mean, who cares? And this is good for college football. Like, there's nothing wrong with having a heated rivalry. Like, you know, as long as it doesn't get personal and there's not cheap shots and that stuff can be limited. You know, nobody wants to see Miami, Florida State from the 90s or anything like that. But it's okay for fan bases not to like each other and for their things to be on Twitter that are chippy and on the field for people to jaw a little bit. It's football. It's fun. It's like, this is what it is. Like, we try to take this stuff way too seriously and make them out to, like, act like they're in a library or something. They're playing football. It's a collision sport. There's a lot of energy there. And I think it's a good thing for both schools. I think UTSA is only going to get better. They're going to be in Conference USA for a long time with Louisiana Tech. So building a rivalry that's fun each year there's nothing wrong with that as long as it doesn't get taken too far.
Well, and that's why both teams wanted to be in a conference that was more regional like that, so you can have those rivalries. It's kind of hard to get up for a game when you're playing at 10 o'clock at night against Idaho and you can't find the game on TV. I mean, this is so much better. And then you mentioned UTSA is only scoring 30 points a few times over the last couple of years. But the last game in 2013 in San Antonio, they beat Tech 30-10. They get that 30 points. It seems like when Tech has to travel down there, even in basketball, there's something about, I don't know if it's the distance or just the bigger crowd in football, or whatever it is, Tech hadn't played well down there in either sport.
Yeah, I think, I mean, basketball is a hard example because UTSA basketball isn't known for being that passionate. But at the Alamo Dome, you know, it's a different experience. You're playing in the dome, which is different for people who haven't ever played in one before. In 2013, you know, I think that was the first time the two teams had ever played, right? Or did they play in 2012 as well?
Played in 2012 in part of the WAC.
So, okay. So, I didn't get on the beat until 2013. So I think some of it is just, you know, UTSA got overlooked by a lot of schools that 2013 year. Nobody expected UTSA to compete for a division title, and they were one game away from winning it. And so I think that year was a lot of not having a lot of film on the team and just kind of under, you know, this brand new school, we're going to go in and beat them. We've been playing football for 50 years. But at the end of the day, the kids on the field are the same age. They've been playing football for the same amount of time. And yeah, it comes down to execution. And on that day, UTSA executed better than Louisiana Tech. And last year, Louisiana Tech executed far better than UTSA. So I think that stuff kind of goes out the window. And people like us who talk for a living and write for a living, we try to make big deals out of that stuff because we need to have something to talk about. Really, at the end of the day, whichever team shows up and executes their game plan better, it doesn't make any mistakes, it's going to win. And that's true every single week.
Well, do you think – what's that? Okay, Mike, do you think does it lend towards UTSA's advantage? I had a stat in the first segment. Between the two teams in the last 3 years, 63 penalties – for over 500 yards of penalty yardage. Do you think it's to UTSA's advantage if the game gets chippy, like Tech did against the Cajuns last week? There's a lot of penalties, there's a lot of emotions. Do you think it's to their advantage to get it amped up like that?
Well, absolutely, especially being at home when you can get the crowd involved. And, you know, referees, as much as they say that they don't, they do react to crowd noise and throw some flags here or there. I mean, that just happens. That probably happens when teams play in Rustin. So, I think it is an advantage to always be at home, and it would be dumb for UTSA not to try to get under somebody like Kenneth Dixon's skin or anybody's skin who has a history of kind of blowing up and being emotional. Why wouldn't you do that? I would do the exact same thing as long as it's within the rules of the game and it's not after the play and stuff like that. I think that is part of the game plan because they need to make this game ugly to have a chance to win, and one of the ways to do that is to make the team more focused about being mad at you than winning the game. And I think that is something that UTSA is going to employ.
Well, before we let you go, give us a score prediction. We're never very good at this, like we've told you before. So, how do you see it?
None of us are. If we were like held to the standard of like our predictions, like coaches are to wins and losses, we'd all be out of jobs.
That's
like
a fact.
Like I'm just not very good at it either. But I see it being a game about 30-17 in favor of Louisiana Tech. I think it's close when it goes into halftime, but as the UTSA offense, you know, can't put together long drives and can't keep the defense off the field, Louisiana Tech finds a few breakdowns in the secondary and pulls away in the second half.
Well, Mike, appreciate you joining us. Good stuff as always. Mike Craven from birdsup.com, member of the rivals.com network. Thanks again, my friend.
All right. Y'all know y'all got me anytime, man. Y'all appreciate it.
Thanks, man. Mike Craven, birdsup.com, joining us here on Bleed Tech Blue Radio. This segment, as all of them have been, also brought to you by National Jewelry in Ruston. This is Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7.
I don't believe it's bad.
Welcome back to Bleed Tech Blue
Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. I am Jay Ford, publisher of BleedTechBlue.com and host of BleedTechBlue Radio. This season brought to you by Trenton Interiors and Company in downtown Ruston, 111 North Trenton Street, in the historic Rogers Furniture Building for all your interior designing needs, from appliances to cabinets to countertops to redoing anything. They are the answer. Go check them out. Give them a call, 318-255-7698. Good stuff, as always, from Mike Craven. 2 weeks in a row we've had somebody that is, and really three, including David Neal from the Miami Herald, that give very blunt and honest opinions of the football teams.
Yeah, I mean, he's right. UTSA can't score, and Tech should win. But if they can make it a physical game and an emotional game, get the crowd behind them, Tech gets a couple of turnovers, hey, who knows what can happen? They're going to try to take away the run and like you said, make Tech one-dimensional and hope that, you know, hope that Driscoll's off a little bit. But should be a fun game.
I don't expect the crowd to be huge. Maybe similar to what Tech had, especially considering how many seats are in the Alamo Dome. Seats, what, 50?
Yeah, so even if they put 25 in there, it doesn't look like a huge crowd.
No, it feels like BB's in a boxcar.
So
similar to Tulane in the dome.
Well, Coach Holtz mentioned you can throw out their stats because of who they played. And, you know, yeah, Tech and UTSA have both played Kansas State. They also played Oklahoma State and Arizona. Tech's played West Kentucky, which is probably the best offense that anybody's faced out of the two teams. So it's not like Tech's played a horrible schedule. But, yeah, looking at their rankings, they're number 91 in total offense and 91 in total defense, 116 in scoring offense. They're only scoring 21 points a game. I think if Tech holds them down to that 2021 marker or under, which I think they will, Tech's going to win the game. I mean, they're going to have to score up closer to 30, and I just don't think they got the weapons to do it.
Somebody asked on BleedTechBlue.com in the Tech Drive community how a defense can be considered good if their scoring defense is 109 in the country at 36 points per game. Well, if you look at their games, there's a lot of points being scored in the fourth quarter.
Oh, yeah, they were playing tight with Kansas State, held them to 30 points. I mean, Tech held Kansas State to, what, 23 in regulation, and they scored late. They held UTEP to 6 points, 59 yards rushing.
But UTEP is a running team, and they're missing their horse.
Yeah, and so that game's kind of hard to tell. It's kind of like Lafayette last week. They had all their points against Northwestern State. It's kind of hard to tell who they were. Whether if you're playing a really good team or a really bad team, it just skews everything. But the biggest thing is UTSA gave up 69 points to Oklahoma State, and that just blew all their numbers to pot.
To smithereens. And Oklahoma State was able to force some turnovers, and that's how it got to be so lopsided. I think Blake Bogenschutz had maybe four fumbles. He had several, at least two. And you can't expect to win very many football games if you turn the ball over as much as they did. So,
seven turnovers. They only gave up 534 yards, which is not good. But you would think if you give up 69 points, you're giving up 700 yards. But they gave up 534. But you're right.
And they scored on lots of short fields. Oklahoma State did.
Five total fumbles, two interceptions. I mean, seven.
You're not going to beat anybody in America turning the ball over seven times.
And you're not even going to stay in the game. And that's why they got beat 69-14. So that really messes up their stats, that one game. But they do have a solid defense. I think they're going to be a lot like FIU. I really do.
And Tech got to 27 there. There's your 30 points like Mike was talking about.
Yeah, I mean, that's all. I think if Tech scores over 25, they're going to win because UTSA is going to score less than 25, probably down around 17, 20, 21, something like that.
Let's take an early break right here, John. And on the other side of the break, Jason, I haven't really prepared you for this. A little recruiting and basketball. Basketball season's honestly right around the corner, and then we'll wrap up the show as usual at 7:15, giving our predictions and wrap it all up. This is Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. This segment brought to you by Peer Service Company and Gary Stokely Keller Williams Realty. We'll be back right after this. Yeah. back to Bleed Tech Blue Radio, brought to you by Trenton Interiors and Company, 111 North Trenton Street in downtown Ruston. 318-255-7698. We're going to talk a little basketball and football recruiting in this segment. Basketball season, believe it or not, right around the corner. Jason, that Derek Jean, the true freshman point guard out of Miami, the commitment slash signee that Eric Conkle had to go and get back in the fold. How many weeks, maybe we should do make it a little over-under, of how many weeks it'll take for him to be the starting point guard with Alex Hamilton at the two?
Yeah, it might be from day one, I mean, to be honest, because I don't know if they want Hamilton having to be the primary ball handler. We'll see, but he might want his guy, you know, in their first game and just, hey, let's get the cobwebs out early, get the kinks out of the system early, and then by conference you've got an experienced point guard.
And he's fast. I mean, we're all accustomed to seeing a fast point guard with Speedy Smith leaving Louisiana Tech last year after a stellar four-year career. But Derek Jean's probably a better scorer, and maybe he might be faster than Speedy Smith.
Well, and that's why you might, and we just had to see what Coach Conkle's philosophy is. Deion Griffin's really good at defense. You've got two really good half-court scorers starting in McCree and Hamilton. So Deion might fit better with them. And then you come off the bench with a speedy point guard that's a score-first guy and put him in there with like a Boykins or, you know, a shooter or something like that and run a little bit more. So he might be that spark plug off the bench they need, and maybe Griffin's your starter.
So who do you see being your starting five on week one against Millsaps? Derek Jean at the one?
Either Jean, you know, or Griffin at point guard.
I think if it's not Gino, it'll be Hamilton. That's what I think. It may not be, but that's just,
yeah, it's just hard for me to see him going that big with Hamilton and Boykins in the backcourt. But yeah, I mean, that's possible. Or and because if you do that, then who's starting at the three? Are you gonna?
So that's where I was going next. Do you put Boykins at the three and go to a little small? Do you bring McCree down to the three? Do you go?
That's why I think maybe you see him go Griffin at the one, Hamilton at the two, and maybe Boykins or the junior college transfer, the shooter from. The junior college transfer from Texas, I'm not good with the names yet, but you go with more of a shooter, try to open up the court a little bit. Either he or Boykins, either one, will start at the three just to get a shooter on the floor. And then I think you've got to go McCree at the four and either Janiyah White at the five or Merrill Holden.
You know, while you were talking about that, the guy we're forgetting is the transfer from Jackson State.
Antoine Luckett, and
he's probably the three.
If he's the score for first point guard too, so that gives you a little more.
But he's 6'4".
He's 6'4", 6'5". He gives you a little more versatility. If you put him back there with Hamilton, then you could put a defender like Kedar Davis at the three, with Holden and McCree up front. So that'll get you a little more experience. But I think you'll probably see who's the junior college transfer from Texas? You got the
Deshaun Robinson.
Yeah, Deshaun. Either he or Boykins, I would guess, would be starting to get a shooter on the floor.
And you could do Deshaun because he's 6'4", 215. He's a thicker player. So that very much works.
Yeah. He gives you a shooter. He's a prolific three-point shooter. That gives you – Boykins is another shooter off the bench. Kedar is a defender. And then Deion Griffin's a defender. You got a lot more options that way. Derek Jean can come in and give you points. So, yeah, we forget about Luckett. And then up front, they're just going to be a little bit thin on numbers with McCree at the four. You're probably going to have to see Kedar play some four like you did last year. And then
it's time for Brandon Shepherd to play four or five. And then, of course, I can't imagine that Janiyah White at 7'2", 200 pounds, is not the starting five.
Yeah, I mean, it's either Janai White or Merrill Holden. Those two guys are going to have to play center, and then Shepard is going to get some minutes at the 4 and 5 just out of necessity because he's your depth. That's the guy that is going to have to step in. Yeah. But I like the size of the team. Luckett does bring that extra height in at guard. But, you know, we'll see. I mean, Deion Griffin and Jacoby Boykins got some playing time last year. They're not short. They're both pretty tall. And Derrick James not short. I think he's 6'3". So, you've got pretty good size out there at guard and on the wings. And if Boykins can consistently hit that shot, that's going to open up things a lot. Yeah. So, we'll see. I mean, I really like the way he's got the team put together because Hamilton and McCree are so good in the half court. If you've got a rebounder in there like Merrill Holden, if you've got a three-point shooter in there like Boykins that can open it up a little bit, and you can, that gives you the ability to put a defender out there like Hedar to lock down the other team's best player. I mean, very versatile. I really like it.
I actually like the way the schedule works out early in the season as well, with as many newcomers on the roster that haven't played basketball for Louisiana Tech. And there's been jokes on Twitter about, will Tech be eligible for the SWAC championship this year, as many SWAC teams as Tech is playing. They open the year with a game against Millsaps. I imagine that's a exhibition game. Then UT Arlington comes to Ruston. Then we'll play at Grambling, and then at Ohio State. North Carolina Central comes into town November 27th. Then they'll travel to Memphis to play the Tigers. Jackson State comes to Ruston, then LSU Shreveport will come to Ruston. Lafayette, the Cajuns, will come in the middle of December, December 12th. Then they'll travel to Ole Miss, then play Southern at home, then travel to Florida Gulf Coast, Dunk City, then play Prairie View at the end of December 28th, then host Southern Miss beginning with conference play on January 2nd, then Old Dominion at home, starting off with this probably the toughest, one of the toughest tests in Old Dominion, and then Charlotte comes to town, another big test for the Bulldogs. Looking at Massey ratings, I know it's hard to take, you got to take Massey ratings in these kind of sites with a grain of salt before a season.
And remember,
starts.
Charlotte lost their entire team with the coaching change, so they're going to be completely different. We don't know what to expect from them. But yeah, I like the schedule at the beginning too, because you mentioned the SWAC teams. In the past, Tech's having to do home and home with Jackson State or Southern or UAPB, and Tech's gone to Southern and Jackson State and lost. Now,
like I said last year, I believe I tweeted it, Tech had to get to the point where you're not playing SWAC teams on the road.
Yeah, because anytime you play on the road, I think the stat is 75-80% of the time the home team wins in college basketball.
And it's even worse than the SWAC. We just won't get into that.
Yeah, I mean, just it seems like they've got their own refs and they're out to get
you.
Whatever. Tech has not had a lot of success playing on the road. And so you buy those home games. Tech's never been to a point where they could afford to buy home games. So now North Carolina Central, I believe, Southern, and maybe even Prairie View, those three were all bought. Tech doesn't have to return them, and so that's huge. Now, I wouldn't be opposed to returning that game at Prairie View because of that to get us into our next point, recruiting in Dallas. It's not bad to play games in Dallas if you're recruiting all kids from Dallas.
But Massey ratings, like I said, you got to take it with a grain of salt before the season starts because their algorithm's not taking any statistics into account. But they have Tech as the 84th best team in the country before the season starts. And just to give you an idea of the teams that Tech will play in the first 10 or so games that are ranked better than them, Ohio State, Ole Miss, and that's it.
Well, how many teams are even in the top 150?
Ohio State, Memphis, Ole Miss, Old Dominion, and that's it.
So even getting into conference play, I mean, before Old Dominion, there's three.
UTEP's at 127.
Yeah, so very.
Tech's the highest ranked team in Conference USA heading into the year. UAB's at 114. UAB's better than that.
Yeah, UAB's better than that. And like you said, that'll shake out after the first 10 or so games. But Old Dominion, UAB, those are going to kind of be the two to pay attention to this year. And
And stay tuned to Bleed Tech Blue Radio. We'll have Coach Conkle on in the coming weeks, and he'll be able to talk about what he's got on the roster, what he expects from the season, and all that kind of thing. Let's switch gears a little bit into football recruiting.
Let's mention basketball recruiting real quick. 2 weeks ago, Jacoby Pemberton visited. Last week it was Adriel Bailey. He was at the game. I even heard some.
Pemberton's a guard out of the Dallas-Fort Worth area.
6'4", 6'5". Adriel Bailey's more like 6'6", 6'7", out of Campsie, Louisiana, Lakeview High School. But he plays AAU ball in Dallas. And then this coming weekend, 6'8", Adrian Johnson. He goes by AJ Johnson sometimes. I think he played for Lancaster last year. He's going to play for Red Oak this year in the Dallas area. So another Dallas kid is going to be visiting this weekend.
It almost makes me think that Dallas is just loaded this year. Now, it may just be that Dallas is always loaded.
Well, and
there's so many schools and so many kids there that you're going to find players there.
The population of that area, and that's why Tech's recruiting students over there, 6.8, 6.9 million just for the DFW.
More than the whole state of Louisiana.
Yeah, 50% more. It's unbelievable. So there's just so many more schools to recruit from, and it's just 4 hours down the road. But Tech's got two commitments already, both from the Dallas area. And so now, with two spots left to fill, they've got these three kids that have visited. They're in really good shape. You would think to get one or two more and have a loaded class of really long
and they
athletic
have room for three
players.
Let's switch gears into football recruiting. Jason, you have some suspicions that maybe Louisiana Tech will look at another running back.
Yeah, I think so. If Ladarius Thomas is injured, they had the running back from Mississippi this past year, the freshman, transferred out of the program. It looks like the numbers there at running back, there's just not a lot of depth. You've got two good players coming up. Jaquise Dancy is going to be a sophomore next year, and then Jerry Kraft to be a junior. But after that, you don't have a lot of numbers at running back. So I wouldn't be surprised if they went after one. There's a lot
of. Or will they give Boston Scott a scholarship?
Maybe so, but even he's going to be a junior or senior, I believe. So you don't have another young quarterback coming up. Even if Ladarius Thomas gets healthy, there's question marks about, hey, he might be even better at linebacker. So, you know, just to have some depth and some more options, you might see him looking at another running back. There's a ton of running backs in Louisiana, Texas right now, and even in southern Arkansas.
And running backs probably quite possibly one of the easiest positions to recruit in America. I mean, you look at even in the NFL draft, they find lots of value for running backs in the draft late.
Yeah, and so there's definitely plenty to choose from. And I talked to the head coach at Broken Arrow High School in Tulsa area this morning. I'm supposed to be getting film on their game between Broken Arrow and Coppell, Texas. I'm hoping to compare both of those running backs. They've got a running back up in Broken Arrow, Jamal Shaw. Looks a lot like a young Kenneth Dixon. He really does, even in his picture, but also just on film. And so I'm anxious to see that film and kind of break him down. He just got his first offer, I think, Stephen F. Austin, but he's had a lot of schools looking at him.
Other positions that Tech needs to finish off with, we've been talking about Gerard Sanders, he's a legacy football player out of the Dallas area.
He's at Bishop Dunn, where Ryan Motes is like their director of football operations or promotions or something. Motes, you know, the Tech legend, works for that program. His dad's a Tech legend. You would think he would be in good shape. He's got about, I looked up the stats, he's already over like 370 yards this season in four games, so he's doing pretty good. And that's the receiver, Douglas Coleman out of Zachary High School is another receiver Tech's looking at. You would think they're in pretty good shape with him.
And they had a tight end from Oxford, Mississippi in this past weekend.
Zach Cusar, I don't know how to pronounce that. Got to think they're looking at tight end with both tight ends being seniors. So that's a pretty good-looking candidate. He was here this past weekend. Drew Melanson was an offensive guard from Hanville that I think was here.
He was here on an official visit, too. So he's a mid-year guy. So
you've already got three guards committed. Will they take a fourth? Maybe. Got to get some more young linemen in the system. So he might be another one to look at.
It's interesting to me that they're taking all these athletic linemen and that we see as guards that they're not prototypical tackles. Melanson is 6'4", So he could play tackle potentially. He's not playing tackle. He's playing right tackle now.
Well, and I think Kennedy Madison and Washtenaw could probably play right tackle. I mean, if he's athletic enough to get out there, kind of like Josh Robinson did last year at the end of the season, just get out there and run block. I mean, I think he'd be really good. So he's versatile enough.
And you need depth at offensive line. It's not – I mean, you look at this at Tech this year. You lost Kirby Mixon or Wixon for several weeks, maybe even for the year. And without the depth that they've built at offensive line, what were you going to do?
Yeah.
So at offensive line, there's so much happening in the trenches that somebody's going to get hurt. It's just bound to happen.
Yeah, you've got to have depth, and they need a lot of young players on offense. Been recruiting so many players on defense the last couple of years. Got to get some of that depth at receiver and offensive line. And receiver is really the one I'm looking at because you've had some injuries there this year, like with Carlos Henderson. And, yeah, Marcus Gaines can step in, but there's not a whole lot of depth behind him. So you'd like to see a couple more receivers added to this class.
And then there was a linebacker from Mandeville that Jonathan Bocconi that visited. That's committed to Texas Tech. It's great to see unofficial visitors in the middle of the season that are committed to Power 5 programs. That is never a bad thing.
Oh, no doubt. And then even you've got 2017 kids coming in with some pretty good offer list and pretty high rankings. So, hey, get started early. I mean, really, you want to get those kids in here for junior day and summer camp and all that, but even getting them here for games their junior year, I mean, that's really something to be excited about.
And then Willie Baker made another trip up to Ruston Saturday.
Well, and his teammate's the one I'm talking about that's a four-star kid.
He actually did not make the trip.
Oh, okay, Patrick Queen. But Tech's looking at him already from Livonia. Another four-star player, Keldrick Carper from Plain Dealing, has been to Tech games already. And then from Evangel, Jonathan Jones, a receiver with several offers, rated three stars right now, but a really good recruit.
For 2017
class. So some really good 2017 kids already showing Tech attention.
Let's take the break. Other side of the break, finishing up the show here on Bleed Tech Blue Radio. We're also brought to you by Brennan Dodge and Gary Queen, with, of course, the title sponsor of Trenton Interiors in downtown Ruston, 111 North Trenton Street in the historic Rogers Furniture Building. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7, brought to you by Trenton Interiors and Company, 111 North Trenton Street in downtown Ruston, 318-255-7698. Jason, we're talking about the running back options in the break, and talking about Kenneth Dixon's squatting ability in the weight room. It's honestly astounding that a 5'10", 215-pound man that can squat 620, 630 pounds.
Oh, I mean, that's how he's built his whole game, is just on his leg strength. And, I mean, that's how he moves the pile so well and breaks tackles. And that's how he is. Kenneth Dixon is just his work in the weight room. And, you know, I was just looking around to see what other running backs were out there, just in case Tech decided to look at one, with, you know, Taiwan Walters leaving, and then with Thomas being up in the air with his injury. But, you know, Barrick Slaughter is a teammate of Willie Baker. We've mentioned Baker a couple times from Livonia. Slaughter's got several offers. Tech's offered a kid out of Baton Rouge, Darbyon Prophet. I think he's from Southern Lab. He's got a few offers and looks really good. And I came across a couple other Dallas area kids, and even a couple of South Arkansas kids. Jackie Harvell from Gurdon's getting some attention, and Kevin Franklin from Camden Fairview's visited Tech a few times unofficially. So there's some good looking running backs out there, and it'll be interesting to see if you see a few of them visiting these last couple of home games.
You look at this at the games, the Saturday's football game as Tech faces UTSA in San Antonio. The line has moved quite a bit. Opened as an 11.5-point Tech favorite, went to 13 very quickly, down to a 10.5-point Tech favorite with an over-under that opened at 62 and is down to 60.5.
Yeah, 60 just seems high because I don't think they can score that much. Tech could go off for 40 and beat them 40-20, but that just seems like a long shot to me. Mike predicted
30-17.
30-17. Massey's got it 31-20. I predicted this morning in my preview 27-17 Louisiana Tech.
27-17. You're right at the line. John, have you done your homework, my friend? When you're as good as you don't have to do homework.
I wouldn't go that far. I was thinking right along that same lines, 34-20 Tech.
I'm going to go 35-14.
So getting closer to the 50 points.
I'm still
not close to the 60 though. Nobody's
I'm not there. A believer in UTSA, and if Bogenschutz is not 100%, which if you're 50-50 on Tuesday, you're not going to be 100% on Saturday.
No. It looks good for Tech. Tech needs to get to 4-2, 2-1 in the conference. Get a road win. Really need to get that one.
Get the monkey off their back.
Yeah, and just kind of get some positive momentum going into Mississippi State. That game was announced at 11 o'clock in the morning, TV game. So
on the SEC network.
Yeah, but still, that TV forced it to open at 11, start at 11. And
Mississippi
so,
State's homecoming.
You know, I think that's good for Tech. You know, I think just get out there and get them early. And I don't think Kansas State was prepared for the fight that they had on their hands once that game got started. And I don't think Mississippi State will be either. I think Tech's going to give them everything they want.
Where do you expect that line to open, Jason? I'm thinking probably 20, 14 to 20, maybe 14.
What was the Kansas State line? It was, what, 13 or something?
Yeah, 10-ish.
Yeah, 10.
Mississippi State's better than K-State, and it's not even close.
Yeah, they just haven't been playing extremely well. I think the line will probably be 10, 11. I don't think it'll be 13.
Really?
I don't think it'll be 13 or 14. I think Tech gets a little respect from that Kansas State game.
You are shocking me, friend.
We'll find out. What is it, Sunday? We'll see pretty soon. I might be totally off base.
Massey has the game as a 14. So two touchdowns. I actually didn't even know that, and I said it. I've gotten too good at this.
Yeah, and so, you know, whatever. You know, 11, 14, whatever. Tech's going to be in that game, and I think it'll be decided late. It might be a 7-point game, and they do score a touchdown to win by 14. But as long as Tech's within single digits in the fourth quarter and has a chance, that's all you can ask for.
Since the Jones – you and your wife are headed to New England this week later for the weekend.
Vermont,
and your sister-in-law works for Mississippi State. Will you be making the trip to Stark Vegas next weekend?
Oh, definitely. We'll be at the game. We'll be all in blue. We'll probably be sitting right in the middle of the Mississippi State fans and all their psychotic cowbells.
Don't forget.
We'll be bringing some
earplugs.
Headphones, something. Because
Tech fans, if you've never been there, earplugs are a necessity.
We've visited.
It's the most annoying atmosphere in college football.
We've visited Aunt Leah a couple times since she's been over there in Starkville. Went to the bowl game against Rice in the Liberty Bowl a couple years ago, and there's just nothing but ringing, and it's just nuts.
For days.
Yeah, and you can't get away from it. So, yeah, we'll be prepared.
You know, you've learned that lesson the hard way.
Also, I will be revisiting the Lot 36 tailgate. I think they got some good food prepared for me, so I'll have to get
Man,
you
you're
over
giving those guys a, you're giving those guys a shout-out.
Oh, heck yeah. The Lot 36 tailgate, they had a big old haul cooked up last year when we visited.
Did you break
over there?
a record for the poundage of food put away in one standing?
I don't know. I mean, it's just hard to eat that much meat, but I was putting it away, and I'm going to do it again this year, so I'm excited. They got their own little corner of the parking lot, and they cook it up.
Going back to Saturday's game against ULL and that crowd, of course, it was assisted by timeout for Tech, but their money spends just like everybody else's does. Were you disappointed in the Cajun fans?
What, the number that they brought? No, because Akron beat them so bad the week before, and they knew what was coming.
Do you feel like Tech brought more to Lafayette last year whenever Tech was not expecting anything from that game?
I do. You're right. And Tech felt like, you know, being the underdog, you know, that maybe they wouldn't win. And so I do think Tech brought more. You're right. And they did that 10 years ago, too. So it's disappointing. You would hope they would bring – 3,000-4,000, and they seem to bring half that many.
It's honestly, now that Southern has come to Ruston, it's flabbergasting how well the Jaguar Nation, as they're known as, travels.
Yeah, and some Tech fans have been screaming, hey, let's schedule them because of the crowd and the atmosphere, and they've delivered. So I'm thinking, hey, every 3 or 4 years, get them in Ruston. It's worth it.
Pay Why
them.
Every three?
Every two, three, four, whatever.
You're going to play in FCS every year.
As long as they're willing to come, write that check. I mean, it's totally worth it.
It's worth every dime. It's incredible. I mean, Chris Brister was the co-host with me that week, and he said 10,000. I was like, oh, you're out of your mind. It won't be 10,000. He was close. If it wasn't 10,000, they were a Big Mac away from 10,000.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard people guess anywhere between 6,000 and 8,000. I mean, it was a lot, and that was the difference in, you know, basically selling out the stadium that week and then having, what, 26,000 or something?
26,900 this past week, and it was 27,000 in some change against Southern.
Yeah, but it still seemed like there was a couple thousand more that first week, butts in seats, 1,500 to 2,000 more, and that's the difference was the Southern fans. They brought more than Lafayette did.
And they tailgated on campus.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. And the tailgating is just getting better and better. You've got signs blocking the parking lot saying no free parking, and it's all for tailgating. It's all for people with parking passes, and it's great. I mean, you see the tents everywhere, people cooking all over the place. And
the one thing that I would like to see, they'll let you turn down there up until 3 or 4 hours till game time. I think that's too short, because I think there's people driving and taking advantage of them, allowing them to drive in.
Oh, yeah.
Probably needs to be 6 hours. If it's a 6 o'clock kickoff at noon, you cannot get down there. You have to come from the tack and bring your stuff that way.
Yeah.
Because most of those people who, if you don't have a parking pass, you're tailgating on the grounds around the tack anyway, so you need to be entering from that side.
Yeah, and people have always tailgated around the tack, but now it's even more densely populated. They're getting down into Hideaway Park. I mean, it's a really good atmosphere, and it's helping with the crowd. And it's just a much better atmosphere than we've ever had, and that's why you're seeing the crowd numbers that we're seeing. And I think it's just going to get better. And, hey, if they keep selling out that stadium or practically selling out 95%, you're going to see talk once they finish that the next phase of the stadium expansion we hear might be the press box. But once that's finished, if Tech keeps filling up 90-95%, eventually you're going to have to see some more seats added, maybe in the north end zone. I'd like to see that stadium get to 35,000, because I think Tech eventually will be able, if the student base keeps growing, like they want to get it to 15,000 students, eventually you'll have a need for 35,000 seats.
10 years maybe, but maybe 15, but you have to make, from a business perspective, you've got to make the tickets a premium, supply and demand, and raise the price of those tickets so that you have, you're making more money before you know that you need seats. If you're not selling out half of your games, if not three quarters of your games, there's no need in 35,000 seats.
Yeah, you've got to start selling them out. And I think and over the next 5 to 10 years, you'll see that. And if you have a 5 or 6 year period where you've sold out every game and the ticket prices have gone up and people are still buying them, yeah, then 10 years down the road, 15 years down the road, like you're saying.
Because the attendance numbers like the FIU game have to go. That was awful.
And what was that one announced at?
20,100, I think.
Yeah, and so that game 10 years ago was 15,000, you know, 13,000. So,
but there might have been 15,000 actual fannies in the seats.
Yeah, you're right. And it's gotten better, but it's still got a little ways to go. But I like that the worst crowd we're seeing is announced at 20.
Well, that's it for this week's show of Bleed Tech Blue Radio, brought to you by Trenton Interiors and Company in downtown Ruston, 111 North Trenton Street, 318-255-7698. We'll be back same time, same place. See you then.
Listen for Bleed Tech Blue Radio, brought to you by Trenton Interiors, every Tuesday, 6 to 7:30 p.m. Go deep inside Tech football, basketball, and recruiting with your host, Jonathan Ford. Our show is also brought to you by your 26 area local State Farm agents, Brister's Smokehouse, National Jewelry, Pierce Service Company, Brennan Dodge, Dairy Queen, and Gary Stokely, Keller Williams Realty, as well as your hotline sponsor, Fairway Cards. Thanks for listening to Bleed Tech Blue Radio.
This is your ticket to sports radio, 50,000 watt ESPN 97.7 FM.